This audio program is brought to you courtesy of Audible.com. Audible, audio that speaks to you wherever you are.
We present John Moffat as Hercule Poirot and Simon Williams as Captain Hastings in Agatha Christie's Peril at End House.
You know, Poirot, I don't think there's anywhere on the south coast as attractive as St. Lou. No wonder they call it the Queen of Watering Places. It's just like being on the Riviera. Mind you, I always think that Cornwall is every bit as fascinating as the south of France.
Yeah, so it said on our menu in the restaurant car yesterday, Hastings.
Oh, did it?
It is hardly a very original observation.
We were sitting on one of the terraces of the majestic hotel. Below us lay the gardens, looking almost tropical with their palm trees. The sea was a deep and lovely blue, and the sun was shining with all the single-hearted fervour an August sun should, but in England so rarely does. Only the speedboats roaring across the bay and the buzzing of the marauding wasps disturbed a scene of perfect peace.
Tell me, Hastings, is there anything of interest in your paper?
Well, nothing much to speak of. Trouble of some sort in China, a swindle in the city, and an outbreak of parrot disease.
How very curious.
Still no news of Captain Seaton.
Well, the man who was flying around the world in that, how is he called?
A seaplane.
No. There is another word.
An amphibian.
That is it.
The albatross. That's what his plane is called. Too bad if the fellow's gone west. But he could always have come down by one of the more remote Pacific islands.
Let us trust not one inhabited by cannibals.
He must be a pretty plucky chap. That sort of courage makes one feel it's a great thing to be an Englishman.
Hmm. It consoles for the defeats at Wimbledon.
Oh, I didn't
no,
mean...
No, me, I am not an amphibian like the machine of the unfortunate Captain Seaton. I prefer to live in one element, the earth. It is good enough for me.
Are you never tempted to renew your detective activities? This passive life
suits me admirably. To sit in the sun, what could be more charming? To step from your pedestal at the zenith of your fame, what could be a grander gesture? To hear people say, that is Hercule Poirot. Mm-hmm. There never was anyone like him. There never will be. I am satisfied. I ask no more. Hercule Poirot has solved his last case.
Aren't you afraid of tempting the gods?
Impossible, mon ami, that anything should shake the will of Hercule Poirot.
Impossible, Poirot?
Ah. You're right, my friend. One should not use such a word. I do not say that if a bullet should strike the wall by my head, I should not investigate the matter. One is human after all.
What was that?
Only a pebble, mon ami. Yes. One is human, one is the sleeping dog, but the sleeping dog can be roused. Let us descend into the garden.
He set off ahead of me down the steps, which led from the terrace to the rose garden, and as he did so, a girl came hurrying up towards us.
Poirot,
are you all right?
It is my ankle.
Let me help you up.
Here, Poirot, take my arm.
A thousand pardons.
Just take it slowly.
Oh, mademoiselle, you are most kind. I regret exceedingly. My foot, he pains me considerably.
Can you stand on it?
It is the turned ankle, that is all. In a few minutes, all will be well. But if you could help me over to that chair, Hastings.
Of course.
You and mademoiselle between you, if she will be so very kind.
Just hold on to me.
There you are.
Thank you.
I think I'd better go and get a doctor.
No. That is not necessary. The ankle turned, that is all. But in a little minute, it will have been forgotten. Mademoiselle, I thank you a thousand times. Please, sit down, I beg you.
I really think you ought to get it seen to.
Oh, mademoiselle, I assure you, it is a bagatelle. In the pleasure of your society, the pain passes already.
I'm very flattered.
It was very fortunate that you happened to be passing, mademoiselle. You are staying at the hotel?
Oh, no. I'm meeting some friends in the lounge for cocktails. I live at End House.
End House?
Over there, out on the point.
Rather an eerie looking place.
Like something out of Edgar Poe. The House of Usher, perhaps.
Anyway, I love it. But the place is going to rack and ruin.
You are the last of an old family, mademoiselle?
Oh, we're nothing very important. But there have been Buckleys there for 200 or 300 years. My brother died 3 years ago, so I'm the last of the family.
Oh, that is sad. You live there alone?
I wouldn't really put it like that. I'm away a good deal, and when I'm home, there's usually a cheery mob coming and going.
That is so modern. I was picturing you in a dark, mysterious mansion haunted by a family curse.
What a picturesque imagination you have. The house isn't haunted. Or if it is, the ghost must be a very kind, protective one. I've had 3 escapes from sudden death in as many days, so I must bear a charmed life.
Escapes from death?
How very interesting.
Oh, they weren't very exciting. Just accidents. Damn these wasps. There must be a nest of them somewhere.
You have been stung, yes?
No, but I hate it when they come right past your face. One of them just missed me only a few minutes ago. They seem to be all over the place today.
The bee in the bonnet, perhaps. And that is a particularly elegant hat you are wearing.
Oh, do you think so?
No, I did not mean you to take it off.
Her dark hair was ruffled and gave her an elfin look. In fact, there was something elfin about her altogether. The small, vivid face, the enormous dark blue eyes, something haunting and arresting. Was it a hint of recklessness? And there were dark shadows under her eyes.
And now I really must be going. They'll be wondering where I've got to.
Nick! Nick!
What did I tell you?
So that's where you've been hiding. Fred is absolutely desperate for a drink.
I was just coming. This is Commander Challenger.
Of the British Navy, I presume. Oh, I have a great regard for the British Navy.
Really?
Come on, George. Let's go and join Freddie and Jim. I hope the ankle will be all right, monsieur. Goodbye.
Ah, yes. I am sure it will. Goodbye, mademoiselle.
Goodbye, Miss Buckley.
So, that is one of mademoiselle's friends, one of her cheery crowd. Oh, but she has left her hat behind. Has the commander a tendre rest for her, do you think?
Oh, my dear Poirot, how can I possibly tell? Give me that hat, I'll take it to her.
Oh, not yet, no. Some amusement.
Really, Poirot?
I grow old and childish, but I am not so completely imbecile as you think. We will return the hat later to End House and thus gain another opportunity of meeting the charming Miss Nick.
Poirot, I believe you've fallen in love.
She is a pretty girl, is she not?
Why are you so interested in her?
No, you are under a misapprehension, my friend. I may be interested in the lady, it is true, but I am much more interested in her hat.
In her hat?
You see the reason for my interest?
Perfectly plain, fawn felt, with a wide brim.
No, I did not ask you to describe the hat. Regard more closely, my dear old imbecile. It is not necessary to use the little grey cells. The eyes will do.
Oh, I see what you mean. There's a hole in the brim.
Did you observe the way mademoiselle flinched when that creature flew past? The bee in the bonnet, the hole in the brim.
But a wasp couldn't make a hole like that.
Oh, what acumen. No, Hastings, it could not. But a bullet could.
A bullet?
May we? A bullet like this one.
Where did you get hold of that?
A spent bullet. It was that which fell at our feet when we were talking together on the terrace.
And I thought it was just a pebble. Was that why you went through that pantomime about twisting your ankle?
Ha-ha, you see at last. I wish to make the acquaintance of Mademoiselle Nick because I believe that it was at her that the bullet was fired. 1 inch of a difference, and the hole would not have been through the hat, but through the head.
Good Lord!
But he made a grave mistake, that would-be murderer, when he shot at his victim within a dozen yards of Hercule Poirot. And what was it that Mademoiselle herself said?
That she'd had 3 escapes from sudden death in as many days.
Exactly, my friend. And now there has been a fourth. The peril. is very close at hand.
Poirot, I've been thinking.
An admirable exercise, mon ami. Continue it.
That shot must have been fired quite close to us. And yet the funny thing is that we didn't hear it. The thing is rather odd.
No, it is not at all odd. All this morning, speedboats have been making trips round the bay. Ma foi, you could fire a machine gun almost and never notice it when one of those abominations goes pop, pop, popping out to sea. And here comes Mademoiselle Nick and more of her cheery crowd. Evidently, they are going to take lunch here. And therefore, when a suitable opportunity presents itself, I must return the hat.
For the remainder of our meal, my friend was silent and unusually distant, keeping his eye entirely on Miss Buckley and her friends. Challenger was sitting next to her, and there was a tall, fair, rather exquisite young man with a supercilious manner and a tired drawl. The woman sitting beside him was an unusual type. A weary Madonna describes her best. Her face was dead white and emaciated, yet curiously attractive. Her eyes were light grey with very large pupils.
No, making that point at all.
At the end of the meal, the two men left to inspect a very ostentatious, gleaming red car, which belonged to the languid young man, and the two women went to take coffee in the lounge.
Now is our opportunity to have a little word with Mademoiselle Nick. I will see if I can arrange a meeting at End House where we can be away from the rest of them.
He marched into the lounge with an almost military determination and drew Miss Buckley to one side.
Mademoiselle, may I crave one little word with you?
I was left feeling rather ill at ease, not knowing whether to strike up a conversation with Miss Buckley's companion or not. She was staring at me with a look of curious detachment.
Oh, why don't you sit down until your friend has finished with Nick?
Thank you. Miss Buckley very kindly came to the rescue of my friend when he twisted his ankle this morning.
So Nick told me. There doesn't seem to be much wrong with his ankle now, does there?
Just a momentary sprain.
Well, at least I'm glad to hear that Nick didn't invent the whole thing. She's the most heaven-sent little liar that ever existed, you know.
Is that so?
She's one of my oldest friends, but I always think loyalty's a tiresome virtue, don't you? Nick told us all a marvellous story about something going wrong with the brakes of her car. But Jim Lazarus, he was with us just now, said there was nothing in it at all. And he's by way of being quite expert about cars.
Fortunately, I was spared any further embarrassing disclosures about her friend by the return of Poirot, who gave a quick bow to the listless Madonna and drew me hastily away to the privacy of his sitting room.
It is all arranged, my friend. We are to call on Mademoiselle at End House at 6:30.
How did you manage it?
Well, she was a little unwilling, naturally. I could see the thoughts passing through her mind. Who is he, this little man? Is he the bounder, the moving picture director? If she could have refused, she would. But it is difficult. Asked like that on the spur of the moment, it is easier to consent.
It still seems perfectly incredible to me to take a pot shot at somebody in a hotel garden. Only a madman would do such a thing.
I disagree with you. Given one condition, it would be quite a reasonably safe affair. To begin with, the garden is deserted and there is plenty of cover. Trees, palms, flowering shrubs. Anyone could hide and be unobserved while waiting for Mademoiselle to come that way.
But how could he be certain that she would?
Because Mademoiselle Nick is one of those people who is always late, and she would take the shortcut. The way through the hotel garden is the most direct route from End House.
But all the same, the risk was enormous. He might have been seen, and you can't make the shooting seem like an accident.
Not like an accident, no.
What do you mean by that?
Nothing. A little idea. Leaving it aside for the moment, there is, as I said just now, the essential condition.
And what is that?
Surely you can't tell me, Hastings.
I wouldn't like to deprive you of the pleasure of being clever at my expense.
Oh, the sarcasm, the irony. Well, my friend, what leaps to the eye is this. The motive for the attempt to kill Mademoiselle Nick cannot be obvious. If it were, then, as you say, the risk would be too great. People would be bound to say, I wonder where so-and-so was when the shot was fired. No, the identity of our would-be killer cannot be obvious. That is what disturbs me. I want to find out about these so-called accidents that Mademoiselle dismisses so lightly.
From the outside, End House was very large and very dreary-looking and was clearly in a bad state of repair.
Now, how about a cocktail?
Oh, yes.
I'm told it's one of the few things I do really well.
The inside of the house could not have been a greater contrast. The drawing room was full of sunshine and the light of the sea. The curtains were of faded brocade, but the covers were new and gay, and the cushions were positively hectic.
I'm simply devoured with curiosity. Am I the long-lost heroine you've been seeking for your next film? Oh, you were so solemn at lunchtime. I feel it can't be anything else. Here, try this.
Thank you.
Thank you, mademoiselle.
Excellent.
Well...
To your good health, mademoiselle. To your continued good health.
Is there something the matter?
Yes, mademoiselle. This... You know what it is?
Yes, of course I do. It's a bullet.
It was not a wasp that flew past your face in the garden this morning. It was this bullet.
Oh, you mean that some idiot was firing off bullets in the hotel garden?
It would seem so.
But I never heard a gun go off.
I want to know about these other so-called accidents that you mentioned. I want to be sure that that was what they were.
But what else could they be?
Now leave me to be the judge of that, mademoiselle.
What if someone is attempting your life?
But who on earth would want to kill me? I'm not the beautiful young heiress. I only wish I were worth killing. But I'm afraid there isn't a hope.
Will you tell me about these accidents, mademoiselle?
Of course, but there's really nothing to it. I'm sorry I even mentioned them. There's a heavy picture that hangs over my bed. It fell down in the night. As luck would have it, I happened to hear a door banging somewhere in the house, and I went down to shut it. Otherwise, it would probably have bashed my head in.
And what about accident number two?
Oh, that's even more feeble. There's a scrambly cliff path down to the sea, which I use most days when I go to bathe. A boulder got dislodged somehow and came roaring down, just missing me. It gave me the fright of my life.
I'm sure it must have done.
The third thing was quite different. Something went wrong with the brakes of my car. I don't quite know what. The garage man did explain, but I couldn't really follow it. If I'd gone down the hill towards the town, there would have been a devil of a smash. But owing to my always leaving something behind, I turned back and only ran into the laurel hedge.
And you can't say what the actual trouble was?
If you really want to know, you can ask them at Mott's garage. I think what it boiled down to was that something had come loose or been unscrewed.
Where do you keep your car, mademoiselle?
In the shed, round the other side of the house.
So anyone could tamper with the car without being noticed?
Well... Yes, I suppose so. Oh, but it's so silly.
No, mademoiselle, she's not silly. I tell you, you are in grave danger. Do you know who I am?
I'm afraid I don't. Should I?
I am Hercule Poirot.
Oh, yes.
You are not at ease. That means, I suppose, that you have not read my books.
Well, no. Not all of them. But I know the name, of course.
Mademoiselle, you are a polite little liar. I forgot. You are only a child. You would not have heard. So quickly does fame pass. My friend will tell you.
Monsieur Poirot was a great detective.
Is that all you can find to say? Tell mademoiselle that I am a detective unsurpassed, the greatest that ever lived.
Well, that's no longer necessary. You've told her yourself.
Ah, yes, but one should not have to sing one's own praises.
There's no point in keeping a dog and having to bark oneself. Who is the dog, by the way?
My name's Hastings.
Oh, 1066 and all that. Oh, but seriously, it's very kind of you and all that. But it's nothing more than a series of silly accidents.
You are as obstinate as the devil.
Well, that's where I get my name from. My grandfather was supposed to have sold his soul to the devil. Everyone round here called him Old Nick. Oh, he was a wicked old man, but great fun. I adored him. I went everywhere with him. And so they called us Old Nick and Young Nick. My real name is Magdala.
What a very unusual name.
Yes, it's a kind of family one. There have been lots of Magdalas in the Buckley family. There's one on the wall over there.
Oh, and very beautiful she is, too.
And the portrait over the mantelpiece, is that your grandfather, mademoiselle?
Yes, that's Old Nick. Quite striking, isn't it? Well, Jimmy Lazarus wanted to buy it. He offered me £50 for it, but I wouldn't sell. I've got a great affection for Old Nick. There was a saying round here that everything he touched turned to gold. But he was a gambler and soon ran through it all. When he died, he left hardly anything beside the house and the land.
Listen to me, mademoiselle, and I implore you to be serious. Your life is in great danger. Today somebody shot at you with a Mauser pistol.
A Mauser?
Yes. Why do you ask? Do you know of anyone who has a Mauser pistol?
I've got one myself.
You have?
Yes, it was my father's. He brought it back from the war, and it's been knocking around the house ever since. I saw it only the other day in the drawer of the bureau.
Perhaps you should check that it is still there.
Anything to keep the great detective happy. That's funny. I could have sworn I saw it in here. I must have dreamt it. No, it's not here. I expect it's somewhere around.
You remember, Hastings, that I told you I had a little idea? Well, it was correct. Supposing mademoiselle had been found shot, lying in the hotel garden, and beside her hand, just fallen from it, would have been found her own pistol. There would be suggestions, no doubt, of worry, of sleeplessness.
Well, that's true enough. Everybody's been telling me I've been looking nervy lately.
They would have brought in a verdict of suicide. Mademoiselle's fingerprints on the pistol and nobody else's.
Oh, terribly amusing.
N'est-ce pas? But you understand, mademoiselle, there must be no more of this. Four accidents, yes, but the fifth time may be different.
Bring out your rubber-tired hearses.
But we are here, my friend and I, to prevent all that.
Yes, we'll look after you, Miss Buckley.
Oh, how frightfully nice of you.
And so it is time for me to begin to act as the conventional detective and to ask the conventional questions. Who profits by your death, mademoiselle?
I can't imagine. That's why it all seems such nonsense. All I have in the world is this beastly old barn of a house. And it's mortgaged up to the hilt. The roof leaks, and there can't be a diamond mine or anything exciting like that hidden in the cliff.
It is mortgaged, you say?
Yes. I had no alternative. You see, there were two lots of death duties on top of one another. First, my grandfather died, just 6 years ago, and then my brother. That just about put the lid on the financial position.
And your father?
He was invalided home from the war, then got pneumonia and died in 1919.
And after you, mademoiselle, who is your nearest relative?
My cousin, Charles Weiss. He's a solicitor in St. Lou. Quite good and worthy, but very dull.
Does he manage your affairs for you?
I suppose you could say that, not that I really any to manage. He fixed up the mortgage for me and made me let the lodge.
The lodge? And to whom is it let?
To some Australians. Croft, their name is. Too terribly friendly for words. Always bringing me sticks of celery and peas and that sort of thing. Mrs. Croft's a cripple and lies on the sofa all day. But they pay the rent, and that's what matters.
And now for your friends, mademoiselle. The ones with whom you were lunching today, for instance.
Well, Freddy Rice, Frederica, is practically my greatest friend. Oh, she's had a rotten life. Married to the most frightful beast. Drink and drugs and all that. She left him a couple of years ago. Since then, she's just drifted about. Oh, I wish to goodness she'd marry Jimmy Lazarus.
Is that the art dealer in Bond Street?
Yes. Jim's the only son. Rolling in money. He's devoted to Freddie and they go everywhere together.
And where is Mrs. Rice's husband?
Oh, God knows. He's dropped out of everything. It makes it horribly awkward for Freddie. You can't divorce a man when you don't know where he is.
And what about the good Commander Challenger?
I've known George for about 5 years. It seems like all my life. He's a good soul, George.
He wants you to marry him,
He does mention it now and again in the small hours of the morning or after the second glass of port.
But you won't accept him.
What would be the use of George and I marrying one another? We've neither of us got a bean. And he must be 40 if he's a day.
In fact, he has one foot in the grave. And you are young and beautiful, mademoiselle, and the sun shines, and there is life and love ahead of you, and I am determined that you shall live to enjoy them. Tell me, have you a friend you can trust?
Well, there's Freddie.
No, other than Mrs. Rice.
Why do you want to know?
Because I want you to have a friend to stay with you. Immediately.
Well, there's Maggie, I suppose. I could get hold of her, I expect.
Who's Maggie?
Maggie Buckley, one of my Yorkshire cousins. I usually have her to stay here sometime or other in the summer. Oh, she's not much fun, though. Her father's a clergyman, and she's one of those painfully pure girls, with the kind of hair that has just become fashionable by accident.
She will do admirably.
I certainly don't know who else I could get hold of at this time of year. But if it isn't the choir boys' outing or the mother's bean feast, she'll come all right. I'll wire her to come on Monday.
Why not tomorrow?
On Sunday trains and all the way from Yorkshire. She'll think I'm dying if I suggest that. No, I'll say Monday.
Very well. Now tell me, mademoiselle, have you ever made a will?
Yes, about 6 months ago before my op.
Qu'est-ce que vous dites? Your op?
My appendix operation.
Uh-huh.
Someone said I ought to make a will, so I did.
And what were the terms of the will?
I left Endhurst to Charles Vice. Mm-hmm. I hadn't much else to leave, but what there was I bequeathed to Freddie.
To Mrs. Rice?
Yes. I have a nasty feeling that the liabilities would probably exceed the assets.
So, now we will take our leave. But I must warn you to be careful.
Of what?
Yes, you are right. In which direction to be careful? But do not fear, mademoiselle. In a little while I shall have discovered the truth.
And until then I should beware of bombs and boulders, falling pictures and arrows dipped in the secret poison of South American Indians.
You make a joke of everything, do you not? But four attempts on your life is no laughing matter. Murder is not to be mocked, mademoiselle. You see, Hastings, where the path leads down the cliff to the sea, that is where the boulder so narrowly missed Mademoiselle Nick. She had a very fortunate escape.
Poirot, there is something I think I should tell you.
Then tell me.
At lunchtime in the hotel, while you were talking to Miss Buckley, I had a little chat with her friend, Mrs. Rice, or at least she did most of the talking.
And what did she talk about?
Nick Buckley. Mrs. Rice said she was the most amazing little liar and that she had invented the whole story of something going wrong with the brakes of her car. She said that her friend Mr. Lazarus told her there was nothing in it at all.
Ah, tiens, c'est intéressant ça. There is, of course, the type that tries to draw attention to itself by having marvellous escapes from death.
You don't think that...
That Mademoiselle Buckley is like that? No, I think not. You observe that we had great difficulty in convincing her of the danger in which she stands. But why should Mrs. Rice say that? What was her motive? Ah, it is interesting. The little facts that are curious, I like to see them appear. They point the way.
The way where?
You put your finger on the weak spot, my excellent Hastings. Where indeed? To hunt down a murderer after a crime has been committed, c'est tout simple. The murderer has, so to speak, signed his name by committing the crime. But here, there is no crime. And what is more, we do not want a crime.
But you must have some idea, some suspicion?
Nothing. On the face of it, no one seems to have any reason for desiring little Nick's death. The property, perhaps? End House passes to her cousin Charles Vice.
The worthy but dull solicitor in St. Lou.
Exactly, but does Mr. Vice really want a heavily mortgaged, dilapidated old house? We must speak to him, certainly, but the idea seems fantastic.
And everything else goes to Frederica Rice.
The bosom friend with her strange eyes and the air of a strayed Madonna.
What is her concern in the business? She tells you that her friend is a liar. C'est gentil, ça. Why does she tell you that? Is she afraid of something that Nick might say? Did anyone tamper with the brakes of her car? And if so, who? And why should Mrs. Rice's admirer, Mr. Lazarus, the wealthy art dealer who is so knowledgeable about cars, support her accusation? And then there is Commander Challenger.
He's all right, I'm sure of that. A real pucker sob.
Oh, you have an extraordinary effect on me, Hastings.
Hmm?
You have so strongly the flare in the wrong direction that I am always tempted to go by it. Ah, well, I shall study the pucker, Commander Challenger. You have awakened my doubts.
My dear Poirot, a man who has knocked about the world as I have...
Never learns... But let us take ourselves off to Mott's garage. Perhaps there we shall learn the truth about the brakes on Mademoiselle Nick's car.
It wasn't difficult to lure the proprietor into a discussion about what had befallen the brakes. He launched off into a highly technical account of what the trouble was, all of which was entirely beyond me and certainly beyond Poirot. However, one thing became inescapably clear. The brakes had certainly been tampered with, and this could have led to a very serious accident.
So that is that. The little Nick was right, and the rich Mr. Lazarus, who knows so much about cars, was wrong. Ah, Hastings, my friend, all this is very curious.
Mm-hmm. So what do we do now?
We visit the post office and send off a telegram.
A telegram?
Yes, a telegram.
Poirot wrote out his telegram without vouchsafing any information as to its contents. Feeling that he wanted me to ask him what they were, I carefully refrained from doing so. There was dancing that evening at the Majestic. Nick Buckley was bursting with vivacity, dressed in floating scarlet chiffon that dragged on the floor. Frederica Rice was in white and moved with a languorous, weary grace that was as far removed from Nick's animation as could be.
She's very beautiful.
Young Nick?
No, her friend. Is she evil? Is she good? Is she merely unhappy? Ah, she is a mystery. But on the other hand, she is perhaps nothing at all. But I tell you, my friend, she is an allumeuse.
What do you mean?
You will feel it sooner or later. Remember my words.
Very mysterious. Why don't you go and have a word with her yourself?
I am anxious to have a word with you, madame, while your friend is dancing.
Oh, really? What about?
I do not know whether she has told you. An attempt was made on her life this morning.
What do you mean?
Mademoiselle Buckley was shot at in the garden of the hotel.
Did Nick tell you this?
No, madame. I happened to see it with my own eyes. Here is the bullet.
But
it was no fantasy of Mademoiselle's, I can vouch for that. And several other very curious accidents have happened in the last few days. Perhaps you've not heard. You only arrived here quite recently, did you not?
Yes. I had been staying with friends at Tavistock.
At Tavistock? I wonder, madame, what were the names of the friends with whom you were staying?
Is there any reason I should tell you that?
Oh, 1,000 pardons, madame. I am most maladroit. But I myself have friends at Tavistock, and I thought that perhaps you might have met them there. Buchanan, that is their name.
Well, I can't remember anyone called that, but don't let's talk about boring people in Tavistock. I want to know about Nick. Who shot at her, and why?
I do not know. As yet, but I shall find out. You may not be aware of the fact, madame, but I am a detective. Hercule Poirot is my name.
A very famous name.
Madame is too kind.
And what do you want me to do, Monsieur Poirot?
To watch over your friend. That is all.
I shall certainly do that.
Thank you, madame. I need not waste your valuable time any longer. Au revoir.
I think you're rather showing your hand, Poirot.
What else can I do? It lacks subtlety, perhaps, but it makes for safety. At any rate, one thing emerges plain to see.
What's that?
The beautiful Frederica Rice was not at Tavistock. Where was she? Oh, see, the handsome Lazarus has returned. She is telling him. He looks over at us. He's clever, that one. Oh, if only I knew.
If only you knew what?
What I shall know on Monday. You have no longer the curiosity, my friend? There was a time.
There are pleasures that it's good for you to do without.
What are you talking about?
The pleasure of refusing to answer questions.
Ah, c'est malin.
Quite so.
But here comes Mademoiselle Nique.
You see, Mr. Poirot, I'm not letting myself be scared by it all.
Évidemment, mademoiselle.
Dancing on the edge of death.
It is a new sensation, mademoiselle.
Yes. Rather fun.
I wish she hadn't said that, dancing on the edge of death. I don't like it.
I know, it is too near the truth. Oh, she has courage, that little one. Unfortunately, it is not courage that is needed at this moment.
What is, then?
Caution, my friend. Caution.
The following day was Sunday. A beautiful, calm English Sunday. All I wanted was to sit on the terrace and let the morning gently drift by. But Poirot was most unusually energetic.
Come, my friend, we will try a little experiment. Monsieur Lazarus and Madame Frederica have gone for a ride in the car and taken Mademoiselle Nick with them. The coast is clear.
We went down the steps from the hotel and walked across to the headland and came to an inconspicuous little gate, rather rusty on its hinges.
End house private.
The French windows onto the veranda were open, and we passed straight into the drawing room and up the stairs to Nick's bedroom.
You see how easy it is, Hastings. No one has observed us. We could do any little affair we had to do in perfect privacy, like cutting through the wire on this picture so that it would be bound to snap before a few hours had passed.
It looks very heavy, that picture. Nick had a lucky escape. There's someone in the house.
Did I not say how easy it was? I think we should find out who this someone is.
What the hell are you doing in here?
Ah, it is Mr. Croft, is it not?
Yes, that's right, but I...
Let us go down to the drawing room. We can talk more comfortably there.
So what's all this about, then? How do you know my name?
I will introduce myself. Hercule Poirot, at your service.
The detective chap? Oh, I've heard all about you.
In Australia?
Oh, yes, yes. We followed lots of your cases. But the local paper said you were here.
The local paper?
The St. Lou Herald. Oh, the famous French detective.
Belgian. But it makes no matter. This is my friend Captain Hastings.
Pleased to meet you.
Oh, hi.
What were you doing in Nick's room? Were you looking for something?
Oh, it's all very simple. The other night, a picture fell from over Mademoiselle Buckley's bed. She may have told you about it.
She certainly did. She was lucky not to have her skull cracked open.
I promised her that I would bring her a special chain, one that would not snap. And since she told us that she would be out this morning, I take the opportunity to do the necessary measurements.
So, that's all that is. If you're not too busy, Mr. Poirot, could you spare the time to come back to the lodge? Have a cup of tea. Australian fashion, huh? Meet the wife? She'd be tickled pink to meet you.
You are too kind, Monsieur Croft. We shall be delighted. You have all the measurements correctly, Hastings?
What? Oh, yes. Yes, of course.
Then follow me. The lodge is only just across the garden.
Have you been in England long, Mr. Croft?
We'd always wanted to visit the old country. We took a trip to the continent. Paris, Rome, Florence, all that sort of stuff. But when we were in Italy, there was this train accident. My wife was pretty badly hurt. Spine injury.
Oh, what a sad misfortune.
And so we came here. Found this place. Just what we were looking for. Not too many cars about. No noisy gramophones. Ah, here we are. Cooey!
Cooey!
I brought someone really special for you, Mother.
I read all about that blue train case, Mr. Poirot. That poor Mrs. Kettering and the Heart of Fire. But didn't I read somewhere that you'd retired? Given up for good and all?
Ah, madame, you must not believe all you read in the newspapers.
So you still carry on the business?
If I find a case that interests me.
And you're sure you're not down here on business now, Mr. Poirot? Calling it a holiday may be all part of the game.
You mustn't ask Mr. Poirot embarrassing questions, Bert, or he won't come again.
Mr. Poirot and his friend were helping Miss Buckley get a new chain for that picture, Mother. The one that fell.
Yes, we were just measuring it up.
That poor little girl might have been killed. She's a live wire and no mistake. Not much liked in the neighbourhood, or so I've heard. Well, that's the way in these stuck-up English places. I don't wonder she doesn't spend much time down here. And that long-nosed cousin of hers has no more chance of persuading her to live down here than a woman does.
Don't gossip, Millie.
Aha. So the wind is in that quarter. Monsieur Charles Vyse is in love with our little friend.
Well, he's silly about her. But Miss Buckley won't marry a country lawyer. She's a sweet girl. But I'm concerned about her. She's had what I call a haunted look lately. And that worries me. I've got my reasons for being interested in that girl, haven't I, Bert?
No need to go into that, Mother. Now, Mr. Poirot, I wonder if you'd be interested in seeing some snapshots of Australia.
It was half an hour before we finally escaped, but the Crofts were nice people, I thought. Typical Australians.
You did not think that they were perhaps a shade too typical? Calling out cooey and showing us all those photographs on which, as it happens, neither of them appeared? Were they not perhaps playing their parts a little too thoroughly?
What a suspicious old devil you are, Poirot.
You are right, mon ami. I am suspicious of everyone, of everything. But then, Hastings, this is a situation in which we can take nothing and no one at face value.
On Monday morning, we had just finished breakfast when Nick Buckley was shown up to Poirot's room. The circles under her eyes were darker than usual.
I've had a telegram from my cousin Maggie. She's arriving at 5:30 this afternoon. I hope that makes you happy, Mr. Poirot.
I am very relieved to hear it. Some of my fears at least can be laid to rest.
Oh, I wouldn't count on it. Maggie's got no kind of a brain. Good works is about all she's fit for. That and never seeing the point of jokes. Freddie Rice would be 10 times better at spotting hidden assassins, and Jim Lazarus would be better still. He has hidden depths, says Jim.
And what about Commander Challenger?
Oh, George, he'd never see anything till it was under his nose. But he'd let them have it if it came to a showdown.
Well, let us hope that it will not.
Oh, I don't know. It's all great fun, isn't it?
Is it, Mademoiselle?
No. No, it isn't. I'm afraid. It's beginning to get to me. I always thought I was quite a brave person.
Oh, but you've shown the most wonderful courage, Miss Buckley.
I spend the whole time wondering whether something else is going to happen. And if it does, how it will happen.
Yes, that is the worst part of it.
This morning, I came here by the road. I simply couldn't bring myself to walk through the garden. I feel as though my nerve had gone all of a sudden and... that all this should be going on top of everything else.
What exactly do you mean by on top of everything else, Mademoiselle?
Oh, just what the newspapers call the strain of modern life, I suppose. Too many cocktails, too many cigarettes.
No, you are not being honest with me.
But I've told you every single smallest thing.
About the accidents, yes. But you have not told me everything that is in your heart, in your life.
Can anyone do that?
Perhaps, Mademoiselle, it is not your secret.
If you think I know something about somebody else or have my suspicions, you're wrong. It's having no suspicions that's driving me mad. I'm not a fool. I can see that if these accidents aren't accidents, they must have been engineered by somebody very close at hand.
And you have no idea whom that person might be?
Not in the very least. Do you know a queer wish I have always had? I want to produce a play at End House. I've seen all sorts of plays performed there in my mind.
And now it's as though a drama really were being staged there. Only I'm not producing it. I'm in it. I'm probably the person who dies in the first act.
Now, mademoiselle, this will not do. This is hysteria.
Oh. Did Freddy tell you I was hysterical? You mustn't always believe what she says. There are times when she isn't quite herself.
Tell me, mademoiselle, have you ever thought of putting End House up for sale?
I've thought about it, but that's as far as I've ever got.
Would you consider selling it if you got a good offer?
No, I don't think I would. Not, I mean, unless it was such a ridiculously good one that it would be foolish to turn it down.
Quite so, I understand.
By the way, there are fireworks tonight, Regatta Week and all that. I'm having a little dinner party at 8 o'clock. You can see the fireworks splendidly from the garden. Will you come?
Oh, we will be enchanted, will we not, Hastings?
Many thanks, Miss Buckley.
Till this evening, then. Nothing like a party for reviving the flagging spirits.
That morning we called on Charles Vice, or rather at Messrs. Vice, Trevanion and Bettesworth, in the main street of St. Lou. He was tall, pale and impassive, and beginning to go a little bald. Poirot had brought a document with him on which he said he needed Mr. Vice's guidance. It was all settled in a matter of minutes.
I am very much obliged to you. For a foreigner, you understand, these legal matters can be very difficult.
Oh, I'm only too glad to have been of assistance. May I ask who recommended me to you?
Miss Buckley. Your cousin, is she not? I tried to see you on Saturday morning. When was it, Hastings?
At about 12:30.
But you were out, I think.
That is right. I left early on Saturday.
Mademoiselle, your cousin must find that large house very lonely. She lives there by herself, I understand.
That is so.
Tell me, Mr. Vice, is there any chance of the property ever being on the market?
None at all, I should say.
You must understand I do not ask idly. I myself am in search of such a property. The climate of Saint Louis enchants me. It is true that the house itself is in very bad repair, but I gather there has been very little money to spend on it. You do not think it possible that Mademoiselle would consider an offer?
I'm certain that nothing would induce her to sell. My cousin is quite fanatically devoted to the place. It is, you understand, a family home. Selling it would be quite out of the question.
And what impression did this Charles Vyse make on you, my friend?
A very negative one. The kind of man you'd never remember on meeting again.
Did you notice anything that struck you as curious in the course of his conversation with us?
Well, I certainly wouldn't have said that Miss Buckley was fanatically devoted to End House. She's fond of the place, but nothing more than that.
And did you notice anything else?
He wasn't in his office at 12:30 on Saturday morning.
The time that somebody took a shot at Mademoiselle Nick. So, we cannot clear Mr. Vice of suspicion.
Nick Buckley had done her best to give End House something of a festive air for her dinner party. When we arrived, she was dancing by herself to the gramophone, wrapped in a highly exotic kimono covered with dragons.
Oh, it's only you. What a nuisance.
Oh, mademoiselle, we are desolated. Whom did you hope we might be?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to sound rude. I hoped you might be from the dressmakers. I've been waiting for my frock to arrive for hours. The brutes promised me faithfully it would be here by 6:30.
There is to be a dance tonight at the Majestic, is there not?
Yes, we're going there after the fireworks.
Oh, Nick, have they still not brought your dresses? Too bad.
I'm expecting it any minute.
Well, they're certainly taking their time.
This is my cousin Maggie. Maggie, these are the famous sleuths who are protecting me from the mysterious would-be assassin. Oh. Take them into the drawing room and let them tell you about it. Now that really must be the dressmakers.
We were left alone with Maggie Buckley, and I formed a most favourable impression of her. A quiet girl, pretty in the old-fashioned manner. Her face was innocent of makeup, and she wore a simple, rather shabby black evening dress. She had frank blue eyes and a rather nervous smile.
Nick has been telling me the most amazing things. Someone took a pot shot at her with a gun in a hotel garden, and a boulder missed her by inches, and the brakes of her car have been tampered with. Surely she must be exaggerating. Whoever in the world would want to kill Nick?
Nevertheless, I assure you, mademoiselle, that it is the truth.
Well, if you think so, Mr. Poirot, I must say, Nick seems rather fey tonight. I can't tell what's the matter with her.
She's behaving with great courage, determined to carry on as usual.
It's the only way, isn't it? I mean, whatever one's feelings are, it's no good making a fuss about them. It only makes it uncomfortable for everyone else.
At about 7:30, Frederica Rice and Mr. Lazarus swept in. She was wearing a blue gown that made her look more like a Madonna than ever, although a very fragile one. Nick came dancing in to greet them.
What a simply wonderful shawl, Nick. Red, like old Chinese lacquer. Where on earth did you get it?
It's a family heirloom, Jimmy, brought back by great-great-great-uncle Timothy from his travels in the East.
It's quite amazing. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, it's warm, that's the main thing. I shall need it while we're watching the fireworks.
That black dress sets it off marvellously. I don't think I've ever seen you in black before. I thought you hated yourself in it. Is there any particular reason?
Oh, I don't know. Is there a reason for anything?
Where's George Challenger got to tonight? I thought you said he'd be here.
He had to go to Plymouth. I expect he'll arrive sometime or other. Maggie, I can't remember whether you've met Mr. Lazarus.
Mr. Lazarus?
We went in to dinner. The food was indifferent, the champagne excellent, the conversation rather uneasy.
It doesn't look as if there's much hope for that poor chap who was trying to fly around the world.
Oh, you mean Michael Seaton?
Yes. If he'd succeeded, he'd have been the hero of the day. He's the kind of man England can't afford to lose.
Nick and I met him at the 2K. She made quite a conquest. Didn't he take you up flying with him?
Yes, at Scarborough.
Have you done any flying, Captain Hastings?
Oh, there's the telephone. It's bound to be for me. Don't wait. It's getting late, and I've asked people around to see the fireworks.
I glanced at my watch. It was just 9 o'clock. Dessert was brought in, and the port. Poirot and Lazarus talked about art. Frederica Rice gazed abstractedly out of the window, and I did my best to keep a conversation going with Maggie.
Well, I do so agree, but it's always like that, isn't it?
Come on out, all of you. It's nearly time for the fireworks, and the animals are coming in two by two.
We all trooped dutifully out into the garden. I suppose that Nick had invited around a dozen people, none of them very interesting. Charles Vice was there, and Mr. Croft from the lodge.
It's too bad that Mrs. Croft couldn't come. We ought to have carried her over on a chair or something.
It's bad luck on Mother altogether, but she never complains. She's got the sweetest nature in the world. Good one.
I'm freezing. I'm going to run in and get my coat.
Oh, please, let me, Miss Buckley. Oh,
thanks all the same, but you wouldn't know where to find it.
Oh, Maggie, be a darling and get mine too.
I don't think she heard you. I'll get it. I need my fur wrap. The shawl isn't nearly warm enough. It's the wind.
That is all they can think of to say. In the end, it grows monotonous, do you not find? And the grass, it is damp to the feet. Oh, I shall suffer for this. I shall get a chill.
A chill? On a lovely night like this?
A lovely night? You say that because the rain does not pour down in sheets. But I tell you, my friend, if there were a little thermometer, you would see.
Must admit, I wouldn't mind putting a coat on.
You are very sensible.
Shall I bring yours?
Oh, it is the dampness of the feet, I fear. Would it be possible, do you think, to lay your hands on a pair of galoshes?
Not a hope. That kind of thing isn't done, Poirot.
Then I shall go back and sit in the house. Just for the fireworks, should I catch a fluxion de poitrine? Let us go in, my friend. We are all children at heart. Les feux d'artifice, the party, the conjurer. Mais qu'est-ce que vous avez?
There, Poirot. In front of the French window. Someone's lying huddled on the ground.
The scarlet Chinese shawl. Oh, mon Dieu, it has happened. In spite of everything, in spite of all my precautions, it has happened. And this time, the murderer has succeeded. In spite of everything, it has happened. I should have foreseen. Not for an instant should I have left her side.
You mustn't blame yourself, Poirot. If somebody was so determined to kill Miss Buckley...
I'm sorry I've been so long, Maggie. I couldn't find my...
Oh.
What is it? What's happened? Maggie. Oh, Maggie.
Yes, Maggie. I thought that it was you, mademoiselle.
Is she dead?
Yes, mademoiselle. She is dead.
Why? Who could have wanted to kill Maggie?
It was not her they meant to kill, mademoiselle. It was you. They were misled by the shawl.
Oh, my God. Why couldn't it have been me? I don't want to live. Now. I'd be glad. Happy to die.
Take Mademoiselle Nick into the house, Hastings, and then telephone the police. Tell them someone has been shot. And then get back to Mademoiselle immediately. She must on no account be left on her own.
I helped the half-fainting girl through the French windows of the drawing room and laid her on the sofa. I was trying to locate the telephone out in the hall when Ellen, the housekeeper, suddenly appeared.
What is it, sir? Has something happened?
Yes. Where can I find the telephone?
There's nothing wrong, is there, sir?
There's been an accident. Somebody's been hurt. I must ring the police.
Who's been hurt, sir?
Miss Buckley. Miss Maggie Buckley.
Miss Maggie? Are you sure, sir? Are you sure it's Miss Maggie?
Of course I'm sure. Why?
Oh, nothing, sir. I thought it might be one of the other ladies. I thought it might be Mrs. Rice.
Look, please, tell me where I can find the telephone.
It's just through there, sir, in the little room under the stairs.
Thank you.
If you'd like me to...
No, that's all. Oh, can you tell me where I can find some brandy?
It's on the little table by the dining room window, sir. But wouldn't it be better
No, I'll see to it. Now, leave me. Please.
Yes, sir. Of course, sir.
I made my report to the police and rang up the doctor, and then took Nick a glass of brandy. She was trying to sit up.
It's so awful. It's all so awful. Everything.
I know, my dear, I know.
No, you can't know. It's all such a waste. If only it had been me.
You mustn't say
that. No, you don't know. Poor Maggie. Poor dear old Maggie, who never harmed a soul in her life. We shared all our secrets together. That this should happen to her. I feel as though I killed her.
Poirot remained out in the garden, conferring with the doctor and the police for what seemed like hours. Eventually he came in with the inspector, who was clearly no stranger to Nick.
Not impeding traffic this time, Inspector.
This is a terrible business, Miss Buckley. Mr. Poirot tells me that you were shot at in the grounds of the Majestic Hotel the other morning.
That's what he told me. I thought it was a wasp, but apparently it wasn't.
And I gather there were some peculiar accidents before that. I'd just like to know how it came about that your cousin happened to be wearing your shawl tonight.
We came into the house to fetch our coats. It was rather cold watching the fireworks in the garden. I threw the shawl onto the sofa here, and Maggie and I went upstairs. I got the coat I'm wearing now and found a wrap for Freddy.
Freddy?
My friend, Mrs. Rice. Then Maggie called out that she couldn't find her coat. She went downstairs to look for it, but she still couldn't find it. I called down to tell her that I'd bring her something of my own, but she said it didn't matter. She'd take my shawl. She must have gone out then.
Now, you mustn't distress yourself, Miss Buckley. Just tell me this. Did you hear the shot? Or shots?
No. All I could hear was the fireworks.
That's just it. You'd never notice a shot with all that going on.
Probably the work of some homicidal maniac. Well, I won't need to ask you any more questions tonight, Miss Buckley.
Thank you, Inspector.
Good night, miss. I'm more sorry about this than I can say.
I have been talking to your doctor. And with your approval, of course, mademoiselle, we think it would be best if you were to spend a few days in a private nursing home.
Because of the shock?
I want you to feel safe, mon enfant, and I want to feel that you are safe. You understand?
Yes, I understand, but I don't think that you do.
Hmm?
I'm not afraid anymore. I don't care one way or another. If anyone wants to murder me, they can.
What happened? There's a policeman at the gate. He said there'd been a murder, is it, Nick?
It's all right, George. Don't be an idiot. I'm quite safe.
God, but somebody's dead. The policeman said so.
Yes, Maggie. Poor old Maggie.
Now come, Miss Buckley. I will take you to the doctor's car. We will ask the housekeeper to pack a few things for you.
Come. That's very considerate of you, Mr. Poirot. I don't want to stay here any longer.
What's the matter? Where's he taking her?
To a nursing home. It's all been the most terrible shock for her.
What a simply ghastly tragedy. Poor Maggie.
Come and have a drink, Commander. You're all to pieces.
I don't mind if I do. You see, I thought it was Nick who'd been killed.
I doubt if I shall ever forget the night that followed. Poirot was a prey to such an agony of self-reproach that I was quite alarmed.
Ah, what it is to have too good an opinion of oneself. I am punished. I was too sure of myself.
No, no.
I had put a cordon round Mademoiselle, and the killer slipped through it under our very eyes. And now the position is changed for the worse. It may mean that not one life but two will be sacrificed.
You really think, then, that Nick Butler's life is still in danger?
Oh, my friend, for what other reason did I send her to the nursing home? I take the doctor into my confidence. He will make the arrangements. No one, not even her dearest friend, will be admitted to see Miss Buckley. You and I are the only ones permitted.
You don't think that the inspector may have had a point, that it was the work of a madman?
No. I am more than ever convinced that the murderer is someone in Mademoiselle's own circle.
But surely tonight has ruled out that possibility. We were all together watching the fireworks.
Now, could you swear, Hastings, that no one left our little company there on the edge of the cliff? Is there any one person whom you could swear you had seen all the time?
No, I don't think I could. On different occasions, I noticed Frederica Rice, Lazarus, Croft, and Vise, but all the time, no.
Exactly. And yet, where is the motive? Who can conceivably have had a reason for wanting to do away with Nick Buckley? But always we come back to the same problem. What is there to inherit? That telegram I sent the other day.
Oh, yes. You were very mysterious about that.
It was to an art expert in London. I wanted him to come down and inspect the portrait of Miss Buckley's grandfather, for which Monsieur Lazarus had offered her £50. Now, supposing, for instance, that it were worth several thousand. Oh, it is far-fetched, but we must neglect nothing that may bring us nearer the truth.
And what did he say?
He will come down tomorrow to examine it. Oh, but now I need to employ the little grey cells. I advise you, Hastings, to go to bed.
Nope. Not unless you do.
Oh, most faithful of dogs. But you cannot assist me to think. At least, I beg you, take the easy chair. You might find yourself taking, how do you say it, 40 blinks.
It was daylight when I awoke. Poirot was sitting where he had been the night before. His attitude was the same, but his eyes were shining with that queer, cat-like light that I knew so well.
Tell me, Hastings, the answer to these three questions. Why has Mademoiselle Nick been sleeping badly of late? Why did she buy a black evening dress? Why did she say last night, I have nothing to live for now?
Well, as to the first, she said she'd been worried lately.
Exactly. What has she been worried about?
And as for the black dress, well, every woman wants a change sometimes.
Oh, for a married man, you have very little appreciation of feminine psychology. If a woman does not think she looks good in a colour, she refuses to wear it.
And the last, about having nothing to live for, it was a natural thing to say after that dreadful shock.
No, Hastings, it was not a natural thing to say. We have there a sudden psychological change. Now, what was it that caused that change?
I've no idea.
Think, Hastings. Think. Use the little grey cells. She was not like that before dinner. What happened towards the end of the meal?
She went out to take a telephone call.
Ha! You have got there at last. She went to answer the telephone, and she was absent for a long time. 20 minutes at least. Who spoke to her? Or was there really a telephone call at all? In those 20 minutes, I am convinced we shall find the keystone of the mystery. I know I am right.
I had a bath and a shave and went down to breakfast. There was nothing about the evening's events in the morning papers, only confirmation that Captain Seaton's plane had crashed in the Pacific and there was no longer any hope of survival. I was still looking through the papers when Mrs. Rice came in and asked if I could take her up to see Poirot.
Madame Rice, enchanté. Please sit down.
Thank you.
You too, Hastings.
Thanks.
Monsieur Poirot, I suppose there's no doubt that this business last night was all part and parcel of the same thing, that the intended victim was Nick.
I should say there was no doubt at all.
Nick bears a charmed life.
Luck, they say, goes in circles.
I owe you an apology, Monsieur Poirot. Until last night, I really didn't believe that Nick was in any real danger.
Is that so, madame?
I can see that everything now will have to be gone into very carefully. And I imagine that Nick's immediate circle of friends will not be free from suspicion. Ridiculous, of course, but there it is. Am I right?
You are very intelligent, madame.
You asked me some questions about Tavistock the other day. As you will find out sooner or later, I might as well tell you the truth. I did not stay at Tavistock.
No, madame?
I motored down to this part of the world early last week with Mr. Lazarus. We didn't wish to arouse more comment than necessary. We stayed at a little place called Shellacombe.
Oh, yes, about 7 miles from here.
May I be impertinent, madame?
Is there such a thing nowadays?
Perhaps you are right. How long have you and Mr. Lazarus been friends?
I met him 6 months ago.
And you care for him, madame?
He's rich.
Oh, Lana, that is an ugly thing to say.
Isn't it better for me to say than to have you say it for me?
Oh, well, there is always that, of course. May I repeat, madame, you are very intelligent.
You'll be giving me a diploma soon.
There is nothing more you wish to tell me, madame?
I don't think so. I'm going to take some flowers round to Nick and see how she is.
That is most amiable of you, madame, and thank you for your frankness.
Au revoir, Monsieur Poirot.
Goodbye, Madame Rice. She is intelligent, bien sûr, but not so intelligent as Hercule Poirot.
What do you mean?
That it is all very well to push the richness of Monsieur Lazarus down my throat.
Yeah, I must say, that rather disgusted me.
No, mon cher, you always have the right reaction in the wrong place. It is not a question of good taste. If Madame Rice has a lover who is rich and gives her everything she wants, then obviously she would not need to murder her devoted friend.
Oh.
Précisément.
Why didn't you stop her going to the nursing home? They'll never let her in.
Oh, why should I show my hand? Is it Hercule Poirot who prevents Madame from seeing her friends? It is those tiresome doctors and nurses.
Look here, Monsieur Poirot, what's going on? I rang up that damned nursing home where Nick is and asked what time I could go round and see her, and they say the doctor won't allow any visitors. I don't believe that Nick really isn't up to seeing anyone. I think you're at the bottom of this, Monsieur Poirot.
Now, listen to me, mon ami. If one guest is admitted, others cannot be kept out. Others whose motives might not be as above suspicion as those of the good Commander Challenger. You comprehend? It must be all or none. And since we all wish for the safety of Mademoiselle, it must be none.
Point taken. No embargo on flowers, though, is there? Thank you, Monsieur Poirot. I'll send some straight away.
And now, while the impetuous commander and Mrs. Rice and perhaps the rich Mr. Lazarus all encounter each other in the flower shop, you and I will drive quietly to our destination.
And find the answer to your three questions.
Oh, if you wish, but as a matter of fact, I already know the answer.
Huh? When did you find out?
While I was eating my breakfast, Hastings. It stared me in the face.
Tell me.
No. I will leave you to hear it from Mademoiselle.
It's good of you to come.
You must be brave, Mademoiselle. There is always something to live for.
I wish I could believe that.
May I offer you my deepest sympathy?
So you know, there's no point in trying to hide it any longer. Now that I shall no longer see him again.
Courage, Mademoiselle.
I haven't any courage left. I've used up every bit over these last weeks.
Regard the poor Hastings. He has no idea what we are talking about.
Michael Seaton, the man who was trying to fly around the world. I was engaged to him.
Oh, I'm very sorry, Miss Buckley. He died like a hero.
You heard the news last night?
Yes, it was on the wireless. That telephone call was just an excuse. I wanted to hear the news alone.
And how long had you been engaged to him?
Since just after Christmas, but it had to be kept secret.
Why was that?
Because of Michael's uncle, old Sir Matthew Seaton. He was a complete crank. Thought women ruined a man's life. Somebody had jilted him, I think. He was frightfully fond of Michael. Oh, he put up the money for the Albatross and the round-the-world flight. If Michael had pulled it off, well, he could have asked his uncle anything. He'd have been world famous. His uncle would have come round.
So you told no one? Not even Madame Rice? Oh,
sometimes I wanted to, frightfully. Especially when his plane was reported missing. It was awful not being able to talk to anyone.
You do not think that she may have guessed?
I don't think so. Of course, she used to hint at things sometimes, about Michael and I being great friends and all that.
But am I not right in supposing that Michael Seaton's uncle died a week or so ago? I seem to remember reading about it.
Yes, that's right.
And did you not consider telling Mrs. Rice even then?
I suppose I might have told anybody. But Michael's round-the-world flight was on the front page of every newspaper. It would have seemed rather boastful to break the news that I was engaged to him. And Michael would have hated the publicity.
Yes, I agree. You could not have announced it to the world at large. I only meant that you could have mentioned it privately to a friend.
I did sort of hint it to one person. I thought it was only fair. But I don't know how much he took in.
You told this person because he was in love with you?
Perhaps.
You once mentioned that you had made a will. Where is it, mademoiselle?
Oh, it's knocking around.
At Inn House?
Yes, but I can't say exactly where. Oh, I'm frightfully untidy. It's probably in the writing table in the library, or it might be in my bedroom.
You permit me to make a search?
If you want to. Look any way you like.